I was ready to sell. Bridget, my wife, just looked at me and she goes, I don't want to sell. She's 49% owner. Over 20 years, I've come to trust her intuition. She was like, Sam, last time you sold a company, you got really depressed. You went into a deep, dark hole. You lost your purpose. I don't want you to do that. Since all these other opportunities have kind of fallen through, what are you going to do?
Dadgum. Good for you.
I have here your 2023 sales, right? We're 10 million.
And we've had a record first quarter for 2024.
And that would put you roughly in the million enterprise value. Like, we might call it a $1 million deal.
Someday we keep on rolling. Someday we're unfolding.
I'm also a business valuation expert. So this is a show that first you think is about numbers and business, but when you zoom out, it's really about life. But what is it worth and what's the right timing on that?
Be sure to like and subscribe and let us know what you think in the comments. All right, welcome back to Inspired or Acquired. This is a show where we talk to small business owners and have real conversations about what their business is worth and ask if they would want to sell it or hold on. So we are gonna have a really special episode today. We've got Sam Leslie out of Colorado, who owns Mesa Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling. And I'm joined by my co-host, Clint Fiore, and we're excited to dig in. So, Sam, it's good to see you, man. How are you?
Thanks, Patrick. Pretty good right now, actually. The last year has been pretty tough. and getting clear on, you know, what I wanted for Mesa and what I want for my employees was that part of that journey. So all things considered, it is fantastic.
Awesome. I love hearing that.
Well, Sam, you're one of my favorite internet buddies. You had been kind of dark the last year, so we hadn't heard from you. And this is kind of why we pulled you onto the show, is we feel like you got a story to tell and we're eager to hear it. I've met you in real life once before, at least, yep. And out in Denver. I know your stomping grounds out there in Colorado. I love what you've been building. For those that don't know, how old are you, Sam? About my age, like late 30s, 40?
I'm 41.
41? Okay. 41 with 7 kids. And they're pitter-pattering above your head probably right now because yeah. They're home from school today.
They're on their hoverboards, and we're approaching our 20th anniversary. So all the kids are with the same lady. Lots of journeys, and we ended up in Colorado. So,
yeah, well, Sam's a great guy, and Sam, I just want to hear a little bit about your journey, but we want to start the same way we always start on this show, just by talking about the numbers of your business and just jumping right into a quick ballpark valuation.
Sure.
So we've had no discussion about this in advance. I've got a form you filled out for us, and I'm just going to make sure this is accurate. And we'll ask a few questions and I'll tell you what I think Mesa might be worth today if you were to sell it. So sure. You have a residential plumbing and HVAC company in Boulder and Denver, 15 employees. And I have here your 2023 sales, right? We're 2.9 million. Mm-hmm. And what has the trend been the last few years on those sales?
Flat. Okay. Like within 2% of each other. So 2022, 2023 were flat. Primarily because of a really horrible first quarter, 2023. We came out swinging in the summer all the way through the fall and winter. And we've had a record first quarter for 2024.
Good to hear.
With 50% of the leads.
Wow. How are you making the same money how are you making better money with 50% less leads? Can we drop that nugget on our
list? It might be 75%. From year to year. So like 2022, we were pulling in, we pulled in 400 something booked jobs, talking March here. March this year we pulled in about 250.
But your average ticket's going up.
Yeah, average ticket's going up. Efficiency is better. Cross-selling is better from you know, plumbers to HVAC, HVAC to plumbers. There's, you know, mm-hmm. flipping leads. Our sales is getting better. Our service is getting better. We're just getting better overall, operationally tight as hell. The 15 employees, four of them are remote and three of them are overseas. So I have 11 employees on the ground here in Colorado.
Yeah. Well, just knowing your market, I've sold a bunch of plumbing and HVAC companies. This is a size range that I've done a lot of deals in. Boulder and Denver is a very hot market. There's tons of M&A activity in this space. Yeah. We've ballparked your earnings at right around 650K of what we call SDE.
Yep.
And for the listeners, that doesn't mean that's in his bank account every year. It just means that's like after you make a bunch of adjustments to the profit and loss statement to account for adding back interest, depreciation, and amortization, the EBITDA add backs, and then what is the seller taking home and pay perks and benefits and making normalization adjustments, et cetera, you end up with what's called discretionary earnings, which is kind of like the earnings power of the company if you owned it debt-free on a normal year. And didn't have to buy a bunch of new stuff. Like, what's the most it could theoretically make right now? So that's what discretionary earnings is, a little rabbit trail there. And what I think in your market, a company with that size of earnings in plumbing and HVAC would sell for would probably be around the 3.5 multiple range. And that would put you roughly in the $2.5 million enterprise value.
Mm-hmm.
And, do you have any partners or do you own it all?
Just my wife.
Okay.
Own it all.
Do you have, did you get into this with an SBA loan?
Yeah. So, okay. So the details on that were 2021, you know, we were having record prime interest rates and, you know, SBA is what, 2.5 over prime. They can charge 2.5 over prime, something like that. I got the best fixed rate I've ever seen of anybody. So I have a 10-year fixed rate at 4.95.
Dagum. Good for you.
And how much debt do you have on the company right now?
A little over $1 million.
Okay. So, I mean, just back of the napkin math says, hey, if you sold for 2.5 and you ended up with maybe 100, 200 grand of deal fees, and then $1 million of debt you had to pay off.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be walking with that much. You'd be getting, you know, 1 to 1.25 pre-tax.
Yep.
Still probably life-changing money. I mean,
with seven
would
kids.
Would that tempt you?
With seven kids.
You do have a lot of kids. Is that tempting to you? Or it sounds like from what you wrote on the internet the other day that kind of sparked this conversation that you did have some of those tempting thoughts, right? Like you were thinking about this course of action.
I had an offer on the table and it was around what you were talking about, enterprise value. And I had a lot of opportunities at that time for some bigger stuff, some stuff that I was going to be able to step into, that would, approximately 30 times the value of Mesa. Something that would grow to that point very quickly. And, that opportunity fell apart. And so, my wife and I did a lot of, introspection. I was ready to sell, because I just gotten beat up over the last 2 years. It's hard. It's hard. So, I was ready to sell. Bridget, my wife, just looked at me and she goes, I don't want to sell. She's 49% owner. And, and I, over 20 years, I've come to trust her intuition. And she was like, Sam, last time you sold a company, you got really depressed. You went into a deep, dark hole. You lost your purpose, and I don't want you to do that. Since all these other opportunities have kind of fallen through, what are you going to do? And so I really started looking about what I wanted, and it was, I was getting beat up and by creating bottlenecks in the company that were needless. I had employees for that. I could hire for that, capable employees. And so this was around October of last year. And we decided to buckle down. And my general manager at the time had decided that he wanted to move more into a sales role. So we decided to hire a GM. So we went out and found a operations manager, basically, of a $9 million plumbing company in Denver. I hired him. We thought we were on the same page. He was with me a month and a half and then quit to go do his own thing. So my then sales manager moved back up into the general manager position and said he was very happy. So we went through, hey, you know, let's sell it. Nope, let's not sell it. Let's hire somebody to get it to where, you know, Sam can step out and kind of do some other opportunities or just kind of take a break. And then he quit on me. He ghosted me for 2 days. And then on the third day, sent me a text. He was like, Sam, Mace is your dream. Mace is not my dream. Sorry. And I was just like, all right, man. And then, so my original general manager is back in the position and is very happy there. And we have tightened our operations super tight. Our overhead is 4 to 5% less than our target. And so we're starting to be able to share that revenue with our technicians. And eventually want to get to the place where we pay them more than anybody could pay them. And it becomes a very exclusive company. It may not be a huge company, but it becomes a very exclusive company where you get the best uniforms, you get the best pay, you get the best tools, you get the best leads, you're, you know, the best perks. I mean, I have a 21 foot camper I bought for the company, and it's a perk for our employees to take out on the weekends. So, we're looking at more perks like that, like side by sides, four wheelers, you know, things like that, that they could take up in the hills. No other companies are
doing that. Man of the people. I love it.
So just, that is awesome. just becoming the company that everybody wants to work at. That's what we want.
Yeah.
So how long was this, like, I don't know, rebirth or refocus from when your wife said, I don't want to sell. And then you created the company that you wanted, or you, mentally you were kind of back in on holding on to me.
So when she said she didn't want to sell, I was like, well, I guess we're holding. That's it. Like, if my wife doesn't want to sell, we're not selling. If we're not together on this, we're not, that's not happening. So I've got to find a way to make this company the company that we want. And what that really, I jumped back in with two feet, and didn't at that time realize kind of how to make the company the what I wanted. Got another Twitter friend that we do some retreats with that involve some psychedelic substances. And so I did three of those retreats in the last year and got very clear on kind of who I was and what I wanted. And on the last retreat that we did, which was 2 months ago, one of the participants was sharing something very, very important. And I was getting two-factor approvals coming through my phone because my team was trying to remit sales tax. And I had created a bottleneck, and I had put one two-factor identification or authority on one of my on my personal phone and then one on my business phone. I had left my business phone at home and it was dead. They were trying to remit tax. So it's all kinds of different stuff here in Colorado for tax. So basically they had to have me get my wife to plug in my business phone to get the code so that I could then relay it and then blah, blah, blah. So this was all happening while somebody was trying to share something very important. And I was asked to leave the room, and I'm one of the hosts. And I was just like,
yeah,
God, this is so embarrassing. Yeah. And at that point I realized, something's got to change. And I created bottlenecks to feel needed. So what I got over the last year from my journeys, my psychedelic journeys and things like that, a lot of therapy, is that basically, it goes back to selling the other company, right? I lost my purpose. So Sam was so wrapped up in Mesa. Sam needed to be involved in Mesa to feel like worthy, to feel needed. And so when I figured out, I took one psychedelic dose, and then the next day my body was like, don't take anymore. Just don't do it. So I started, a lot more intuition, listening to myself. So I sat down and I spent that next day writing and thinking about the things in Mesa that I could change to make it a better company. Like make it, what are the issues that we have? We have turnover in Colorado. There's a ton of plumbing and HVAC companies. Competition is super high for great technicians. Pay just keeps getting bumped up and bumped up and bumped up. You know, perks get bumped up and all that kind of stuff. So you're trading out. I was like, how can we keep people here? How do we become like the special operations elite group that people want to come work for and never leave? And everybody wants to come work, but can never get a slot because nobody wants to leave. So it's like, well, we could give perks. We can perks that nobody else gives. We can give pay that nobody else gives. We can give, better uniforms. We can send people on vacations, things like that. These are things that are in the works right now, but really where the rubber met the road was where I was like, holy crap. I need to get these two-factor approvals off my phone. And when I got home from that, I sat down for the next week and a half, and every single task that my team asked me to do or that I was required to do, I did videos, I did tutorials, I did SOPs, and I put them all in a central location where everybody could get them, and then assigned those duties out to my team. And so really it took not much time. It didn't take much time to kind of turn it into what I wanted. What I thought I wanted wasn't what I actually wanted. So like what I actually wanted was to feel needed, right? I wanted to feel needed. I wanted to feel important. I wanted to feel essential. And what that was doing was just running me down. And destroying me, so much that I wanted to sell. So that's kind of how it came about, guys. The interesting thing was the first psychedelic journey I went on, I was convinced that I wanted to sell. And at that time I was, but then my wife came in and was like, wow. So
what a watershed moment. So we're recording early April. That was what, November, October, November?
So the first journey was in March of 23. And then, okay. And then the last one was in February. Yeah.
Okay. Really, really recent.
Yep. So, and we continue to do them. So I continue to do it because it's good for my health, mental health. I mean, everybody out there, like if you're running a business and you're depressed and anxious, we're here for you. Like, reach out. We can talk because depression and anxiety are something that, you know, we see across, you guys see it across Twitter. Nobody else talks about it. I try to talk about it. And then people really latch on. Like, I got a DM the other day, was like, "Hey man, thanks for saying something about needing to rest." And he was like, "How do you rest?" And I said, I don't know. I drink alcohol, I use THC, and I do psychedelics. And until I can figure out how to calm myself down and rest, like, internally, those are some of the substances I use. But I don't have it all figured out. I just know I need to rest.
Yeah, that's great. Entrepreneurs are about 3 times more prone to depression than non-entrepreneurs. So definitely resonates. And if there's people talking about it or not, when it's real and it's happening and it's widespread.
And there's help.
And yep. And if you open up to other entrepreneurs, 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, yeah, I went through that same thing, or I'm going through that same thing right now. And so you're not alone out there.
Yeah, absolutely, everybody.
So you tweeted this out that you wanted to sell, your wife didn't, and then you wanted to create the type of company that you wanted. And then a couple of days ago, you tweeted you were having fun doing spring break with your kids.
Yeah.
So what does it look like for you now? Like, your GM runs with stuff, and like, what, I don't know, what do you,
so I have,
what's your day-to-day?
My day-to-day looks like, I get up in the morning, I get my kids ready for school with my wife, and then we ride together and take them to school. And then we come home, I jump on the computer. I'll check we integrate everything with, we're a Microsoft company, so we use Microsoft Teams. So everything's integrated on Teams. At 7 a.m., I have an overseas CSR start answering calls, and then the whole team jumps on at 8. Now we have coverage until 6 p.m. We're probably going to hire somebody else to get overnight eventually. So we start from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. The team jumps on about 8, and we start dispatching around 8:30. We're a residential company, so we really have to work around people's schedules. And we don't want to get there too early. So I monitor some things. Usually I'm pulling reports. I'm looking at things that we can improve. But what I realized over the last year was every time I jumped in, I usually mess things up. Cause we have SOPs. Like, if I need to help change an SOP, it usually comes from me noticing something or a team member saying, "Hey, this isn't working." It's like, all right, let's change the SOP. But what I realized was that over the last year, so I come from the military. I was there 10 and a half years. I was a bomb tech. And then I was in acquisitions. And what that means is I was in research and development for small arms. And so millimeters count, right? Like, count, they could be life, between life and death, especially when you're messing with bombs and things like that. So I was optimizing my business because I needed to feel, right? I needed to feel essential. So I was optimizing to the point where there was zero wiggle room. People were feeling micromanaged, you know, things like that. I liken it to how an engine runs. Engines are made of metal, and the only thing that makes them last for a long time is oil. And if you run out of oil, if your tolerances are so thin that oil can't get in between, your engine locks up. So what I've realized over the last year is that business needs some waste. That waste is the lubricant that allows people to feel like humans, and have some autonomy and be able to make decisions themselves. So me optimizing every time I jump in, was I optimizing for that 1% or 0.5% of value that I could draw from that day? And what was that doing for to my team? And so that's what I realized. I started pulling out. Now I just try to make decisions on big stuff. Hey, Sam, we have an upset client, or we've got to go talk to the city of Boulder for some reason, or, you know, things like that. But usually my GM takes care of that stuff because he's holding the master plumber's license. So I advise. I truly am mostly an advisor, and my day-to-day is in trying to figure out marketing. So basically just trying to figure out how to get us more leads.
Got it. Cool. So just holding on too tight. You need a little bit of waste, a little bit of oil in there to keep things flowing.
I like that analogy. And it's almost reminds me of, like, you know, running too close to red line is not good for the engine either. Right.
Correct. Exactly.
You're going to burn it up.
I mean, if you're cruising in the air, Clint, I mean, you're at cruising speed, right? I mean,
yeah,
you're not a takeoff or rotation speed, you know, all the time. So
I don't, yeah.
I also think about business as, like, I've started thinking about performance a lot. And do people pro sports, they have seasons, you know? Pro sports has seasons. Special operations has rotations. Now they're on all the time and they need to be able to perform all the time, but they have seasons. And so I'm really starting to think about what that looks like for Mesa.
Residential plumbing and HVAC is kind of a constant. It's a constant pressure that you have to deal with. And so you have to build some of that in.
Yep.
To your system, if you're going to create that.
And I'm wondering about how to, because when you're thinking about business value, you want to see consistent revenue, right? You want to see consistent revenue. You want to see consistent profits. And how does that fit with giving people breaks? How does that fit with not burning people out? That's a tangent.
So you've been flat the past few years. I'm going to take us back to talking about business value, talking about the buy sell, talking about the sell conversation.
Oh yeah.
Because, part of the show is getting in the head of an entrepreneur and how do they approach the, am I thinking about selling or am I inspired to hold for the long term and keep growing this thing? So tell me about, we kind of ballparked it today at about a 2.5 million value. Mm-hmm. You've been flat the past few years. You've just made some substantial changes to the way you're running the company. Pull out your crystal ball and, like, walk me 3 to 5 years into the future. Do you anticipate staying flat for the next 5 years, or do you think you're going to enter into a bit of a growth phase? Or, like, what do you think you're likely to be at, say, 5 years from now if you're at 2.9 million and flat today?
So the reason we were flat last year was because we were not good at sales and service. If we had the same ticket value, if we had the same close rate, if we had the same everything we have right now, and we compared it to the lead volume of last year, we would be approximately 3.5 to 4 million.
So that's why your world is leads right now, because you're trying to, you got some of the other fundamentals right.
All the other fundamentals are tight and really good.
Yeah.
And so the only thing really holding us back is our lead volume. If we were at the same lead volume as 2022, we'd be a $5 or $6 million company right now. Mm-hmm. All things being equal, with our operations being as tight as they are right now. So going back to why I didn't sell, all of us entrepreneurs, let's build a business to sell, right? If you're selling to a financial buyer, usually you're going to get a good bit of cash. If you're selling to a private equity fund, they're probably going to want you to roll equity to get a second bite at the apple. Well, I don't trust second bites at the Apple. I've seen too many roll-up funds blow up and just not do a great job. So at that point, we were talking to a private equity fund, and they wanted me to roll significant equity, which means that I wasn't going to walk away with much at all. And so that the value proposition was just bad. And then I look at like how much money are we going to be able to bank over the next 5 years? Like, why would we sell now? Especially if we could build a business that we want 5 years from now. So our conservative target this year is 4 million. And then our target in the next 3 years is 6. And then 5, I'm thinking probably around 7 or 8, but we're looking at acquisitions as well. So we may, buy another company that's our size and jump immediately to 6. I think we have the systems in place. We just need probably one or two more managers, to incorporate those techs. But I think if we merged a company our size, it would be not simple. It's always hard, but, we have the systems in place to do that. So I'd say in 5 years, yeah, probably 7 to 10.
Okay. So let's pretend 5 years from now, you're at say 7 million revenue, which is doable. And I think that's doable with or without acquisitions. Mm-hmm. And I think if you get the fundamentals right and build the culture you're trying to build and get good at recruiting and lead generating, Denver and Boulder are just not going anywhere. Lots of work to do out there.
Yep.
So I think it's doable. Let's say we did a valuation at that point and you're driving, say, I don't know, 15, 20% to discretionary earnings. Mm-hmm. Let's call it, a million and change.
Yep.
Your valuation may be, your multiple might be a little bit higher at that point.
Yep.
You're probably going to be maybe in the 5-6 range on multiple.
Yep.
So you might be close to, like, we might call it an $8 million deal, you know, $7, $8 million. And your debt that's a million today might be paid down to 600, or it might be gone.
It'll be really close, if not gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say you have very little debt and you've got 7, 8, 9 million of a deal on the table with a financial buyer, for example, no second bite of the apple. It's all right there. Are you taking that deal in 5 years, or how do you approach that, like, thought process of when do you know it's time, and what's going to drive that decision for you?
Number one, my involvement. So, let's assume in 5 years that I have the same level of involvement or less. I'm almost in the hold forever camp right now, just because liquidity events are tough to shelter, and you lose a ton of value through taxation. So at that point, you know, if I'm walking away, so say it's a $7 million deal. Say it's a $7 million deal, and I didn't take any precautions or any kind of planning, tax planning, I'm going to walk away with, say, 4. And I'm involved 5 to 10 hours a week, and I'm making $1 million in profit. Probably not going to take that deal. It's just like, why would I? The only thing that would change my mind is that I wasn't having fun anymore. And that I had a different business that was generating more and I had more fun with. And if Mesa became a distraction from something else in my life that was more important, and I couldn't get rid of that distraction in some way, then I would sell.
That's great. I appreciate you sharing that. Like, when I just hear you talking, you seem like the kind of guy that is really leads from the heart and gets, you're your identity somewhat intertwined with what you do, you know, and that can make it extremely hard to pull you from a business because it feels like part of you is being ripped apart. And that's probably why you fell into that deep hole that your wife pointed out when you first sold the company, because you lose a part of yourself and you can get lost.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I think you've gained some critical self-awareness. I think you've got a great bride that is your better half here, like helping you with some guardrails to make sure you don't fall into those traps again. And yeah, I tend to agree that like, if you make it about the dollars or too much logic and you ignore the heart and you ignore the spirit and what, is really going on with the way your brain and your body processes and attaches to what you do, you could be setting yourself up for failure, even at the height of a financial win.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I tend to agree, man. Like if you've got something that you've got a fire lit about, that's the next thing and you're 100% on board and your wife's on board that this is what you're going to, and you've got that safe kind of like ship running alongside that you can jump to, like that's the time to make a move. But just jumping out into open water with a bag of cash is probably dangerous.
Yeah, it is
for you.
It is. And what happened when I did do that, I didn't have much to show for it after a year, just felt empty. But what I think what was really great was kind of going through an exercise of after I did my last journey and the next day, I was like, why did I buy Mesa? You know, why did I do it? Let's go back to those original motivations and let's see what my goals were at that time. And let's see if I've met them. And I had, I left the military, jumped out with no job, no business, found a business right before I left the military, pushed really hard for 90 days to buy it, closed on this amazing SBA deal, found a house, moved out here with no plan, no nothing, and made it happen. And then, you know, went through some real trials and tribulations over the last 2.5 years, just getting my butt kicked. But what was my motivation in the first place? The military pension is not great, especially for somebody with a bad family history like myself. If I was to die with children still at home, my military pension would be cut in half. My disability would go away, things like that. My wife would go from, you know, maybe $7,000 a month to $2,000 a month with kids at home. So with my family history of heart disease and cancer and things like that, I knew I couldn't pass anything down to my kids, and I knew I didn't have anything to prepare or to take care of them if I wasn't here. So I jumped out. I gave up the military pension, bought Mesa so that I could build wealth and build a safety net for my family in case I wasn't here. So I did that. That's great. We make good money. We're able to support the family. The kids are eating. It's not a problem. And then my intention was to build the business where I stepped out. And I realized that I had just built the business where I sewed myself in. And I decided to remove myself, and then I did it. So now I've got a business with equity in it. I've got people that I love to work with who are amazing. We take care of people. I make a good living, and I'm not afraid of, you know, of not every day. Some days I'm afraid of losing everything, you know? But most of the time things are great. And so why would I sell something that I've built and got to the place where I accomplished my goals? It would be that it no longer fit my goals. If I had something else. So anyway, I think 5 years from now, man, I think Mesa is still We're still humming along with Mesa.
So his audio was cutting out for me, Patrick. Were you able to hear that smoothly?
I caught most of it, and then my neighbor is plowing my driveway right now. So we got
can you hear me now, guys?
It seemed like you just got grainy, and I got like 90% of it.
Would you like me to repeat something?
I'll try to summarize this so we can get it as clean as we can.
Ultimately, I didn't realize this. So if you left the military when you did, you sacrificed your pension to leave a little bit earlier.
Yes. So I got zero pension. So crazy, the plan that I was on was basically, you stay to 20 years, you get a pension. If you don't, you don't get anything.
How many years did you stay?
10 and a half.
Yeah. Gotcha.
But as you said, now you've set yourself up and set your family up for more financial security with the type of business that you want, making good money in a location that family's happy, and 5 years from now we'll be cranking out even more.
I think so. But I have to also, and that was another journey too, is to become okay with being flat. If Mesa didn't grow, would I be okay? Yes. If it just became a very, very small, exclusive company where everybody wants to work there and you love each other and you're doing good work, is that okay? And I said, yeah, that's okay. My original goal was to build a $50 million home service company. I don't want that anymore.
Audio froze. Hang on. All right, you're back.
I was saying that my original goal was to build a $50 million home service company. But at this point, I don't want that anymore.
Yeah.
If it's going to eat me up.
Yeah. I think you've got a really inspiring journey, Sam. I think you're kind of teaching a lot of valuable lessons for people that are maybe just starting in this journey, because I think there's a lot of worship of the almighty dollar and growth at all costs, but at what cost, you know? And I think that you've made so many great points about health, about mental health, physical health, about family first. And that when you were in that tough skid recently and you zoomed out, no, you weren't on pace for your $50 million original goal, but when you actually took stock of all the other goals you had set for yourself, being able to get out of the military and provide for your family and start building wealth and provide a safety net and, you know, just all those other things you listed, then that helped give you some perspective to say, like, maybe I'm not a failure, you know, like maybe I'm not screwing up here, because it's not all about the dollars, right? Like, you're 9 out of 10, you know, on all these things.
Yeah. I realized I won. I won. And it's okay. Like, winning my game is important, more important than winning anybody else's game. I don't need to win the $50 million game. Yep. I can win a $3 million game and be happy. But getting there, when you're watching other people just skyrocketing in growth, making huge jumps, is tough. It's tough, but I'm in a different place from all those other people. You know, I have two kids in high school, going to have another in high school next year. One's moving to college, going to college. I've got a 6-year-old in kindergarten. Like, I'm 41 years old. I'm in a much different place from a lot of these people who are in their 20s and 30s buying businesses. I wish I had had the same I did have the same opportunity, but I just didn't take it. But I have to realize, you have to realize where you're at. And it's not just about growing your business. It will eat you up. It will eat up your family. It will eat you up, and it will destroy your mental health and your actual health if you do, if you let it. So you have to start, like Clint was saying, zoom out, look at all of your goals. Where have you won? And then celebrate those. I'm horrible at celebrating because every time I think I celebrate, I feel like the other shoe is going to drop and I'm going to lose everything. Like, don't celebrate because, you know, superstition. Anyway,
yeah.
Realizing that you've won, and then everything else is just icing on the cake.
That's awesome.
That gives you some perspective.
Thank you, man. That, I mean, your whole interview has just been a gift, and I think that's the best way to wrap it up, man, is like that self-awareness, that zoom out, realizing you've already won, calibrate to what's truly important in life. Man, there's just so many great takeaways. So, man, I appreciate you being vulnerable. I appreciate you coming on and just sharing your heart, sharing your story. I mean, I don't have much to add at this point. Patrick, you got anything else you want to get from Sam before we wrap up today?
This is great, man. Just a real conversation, and I'm excited for you and where you're at. So if people want to connect with you, where's the best place to connect with Sam?
At Sam T. Leslie on Twitter, X, whatever it is now. At Sam T. Leslie. It's been a pleasure, guys. Love you. Love what you're doing. I hope we didn't get too far off of your podcast format. But I just want people to know that you can forge your own way and be happy there. You just need to figure out what's going to make you happy. So reach out if you need to talk.
I love that. Are you going to do it? You gonna do the sign off like you do on Twitter, where you say "love this shit"?
Love this shit.
There it is. That's a wrap. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, guys.